from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and in this Forum segment, we discuss the unprecedented showing here in the Bay Area of a restored version of the 1927 classic Abel Gance's silent film Napoleon, which will be shown in its newest restored form at the Paramount Theater in Oakland. Put together by cinema historian Kenneth Brownlow with the original score, which you're hearing part of here. In fact, that's Carl Davis conducting the Wren Orchestra of London in the Eagle of Destiny finale from the Napoleon score. The original score will be conducted by the film's original composer, in fact, when you see it, and many of you will see it, we hope, at the Paramount. San Francisco Film Festival has sponsored this whole event, and it's been called the cinema event of a lifetime. It's brought the groundbreaking film here with a great deal of excitement, and we want to discuss it in this forum segment. So let's do that. Let me first of all introduce Kevin Brownlow, who's here with us, film historian and filmmaker. He'll be with the Napoleon screening at Oakland's Paramount Theater on March 24th and 5th and March 31st and April 1st. And you can get more information on our website, but good to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome Anita Monga, who is, of course, the artistic director of the San Francisco Silent Film Festival and will also be at the event. And the Silent Film Festival not only organized this event, but they have their annual festival, as many of you know, in July. And welcome, Anita Monga.
Welcome. Thank you.
Glad to have you both here. Kevin Brownlow, a long labor of love for you. Is this the final restoration?
You never say that.
But why did you want to restore it in the first place? Yeah.
Well, I became acquainted with the picture in an odd sort of way through a home movie 9.5 version of just two reels. But those two reels astonished me to such an extent that I became completely addicted to it. And when I was working in documentaries in the film industry, a version came across from France, which I knew from my version and seeing others, was very inadequate. And I thought, what a tragedy. There were actually people laughing at it. That really hurt. And so as soon as I could afford to, I started trying to put it back together again.
And quite a film it is. I mean, there was an American version, but it was so chopped up that it got terrible reviews and was never given the kind of really grand reception that it should have received. Anita Monga, let's in fact talk about it. This film was made in the mid-20s, first released in 1927, but so many things were new. I mean, just a lot of the techniques in the film, split screen and fast cutting. In fact, I saw that snowball scene, which was very, this rapid cutting that, you know, you have to see to believe, even today, and all these subliminal effects. It's really a pioneering film.
Well, Abel Gance employed so many techniques in this film. It's quite extraordinary. You know, our motto at the Silent Film Festival is that true art transcends time, and I think this film really speaks to that. It's as relevant and as beautiful and as epic today as it ever was. Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, thank you, Kevin. Indeed. In fact, this is a film that inspired CinemaScope. I remember seeing The Robe. I'm dating myself here in CinemaScope and didn't know about all this previous history. It's, in fact, including a three-screen finale. The original score, as I said, by the composer of that score conducting. And it's, what, 5.5 hours, Anita?
Yes, 5.5 hours. So but give you a dinner break.
Well, you guys have put up your whole budget for this film just about, haven't you? I mean, your budget busted on this.
It's like we are the little scrappy festival that could. You know, this was a dream since we knew about the restoration in 2000 when it played the Royal Albert Hall. And ever since then, it was a dream. And for years, we've been talking about how we could possibly make this happen. And then I think it was 2 years ago at the Giornate del Cinema Muto in Pordenone when we got together with Kevin and his partner, Patrick Stanbury, and hatched the plan to go forward.
Well, let's talk about some of these techniques, particularly with you, Kevin Brownlow, because there's shots from a pendulum, shots from a sled, shots from a bicycle, a galloping horse. I mean, and the genius here is a man named Simon Feldman, who I saw interviewed at the age of 103 years of age. But again, in fact, I think, didn't he build a steam engine with compressed air, some kind of apparatus to get one of his shots?
Yes, because the camera had to be on the back of a horse, and if you had a battery, you had the problem with the acid in the battery splashing on the poor horse. So he designed a motor which was operational through compressed air cylinders, something that was, it's difficult to explain and even more difficult to operate, but it worked.
Oh, it worked, and that's the important thing. What exactly is polyvision, Anita? And what are the challenges to present it, or polyvision at the Paramount?
Well, polyvision requires what we're doing is outfitting the Paramount Theater, which also already has a very big screen, but the screen for polyvision needs to be much bigger. Actually, that's being projected from three separate projectors at the same time, on this huge screen that we're constructing this week.
What makes this film so vital in terms of film history to you? We're talking about all the techniques, but that aside, I mean, it's a story of the young Napoleon, and yet what does it capture about that is so compelling?
Well, Gans is a really interesting director, and I think this question probably is best answered by Kevin. But for us, we're showing the public, the general public, films that that exemplify what we're about. We want to bring these old texts back to life with beautiful music that's respectful and brilliant, and we use a phrase that Kevin coined: we're presenting live cinema. And really, when people see Napoleon, I guarantee it, you will be swept up by the grandeur and beauty, and is absolutely modern.
Well, somebody in one of the palaces, I guess, thought it was a real Napoleon. In fact, is that part of it, what makes this film so have such an impact on you? You've given so much to it, Kevin Brownlow, the fact that it just seems so palpably real. When the people are crying when you hear the Marseillaise, for example, you know, it seems like you're right there. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, it was the first thing that struck me as a kid when I saw it. It looked like an inspired newsreel of the 18th century. The authenticity is outstanding. And the people that were involved in it were swept away by the spirit that they were recreating. In fact, in that Marseillaise sequence, those people are strikers from the Renault factory next door to the film studio.
The film, as I said, had not a very good reception here in the United States, but it was so chopped up that it was almost unrecognizable from its origins, yeah?
They sent it over around 6 hours, and MGM cut it down to 75 minutes.
There's a metaphor there, or an allegory, I think, about about Hollywood, perhaps. You met Abel Gance, didn't you? Tell us about
Many
him.
Many times. Yeah. He was the most extraordinary character. When I first met him, he was in his 60s, and he looked like a medieval saint with his white hair swept back and a very handsome face. And when you talked to him, you felt you were talking to Victor Hugo. You wanted to write down every sentence he came out with. But he did have a great sense of humor, and he was, I think he was a genius, but he had a very rough time.
Well, we're talking about his silent epic, Napoleon, which has had a turbulent history since it premiered in 1927. The film has not yet, as Dan Zoll said, met its Waterloo, thanks to Kevin Brownlow, who's here with us in studio. And the cinema historian spent decades restoring the film's scattered fragments. And starting this weekend, the 5.5-hour account of young Napoleon Bonaparte's life will be shown at Oakland's Paramount Theater, complete with symphony orchestra, requisite 3-screen finale. And we're discussing the film and its significance in film history. And if you'd like to join us, you are cordially invited to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your phone calls. You can join us now at 866-733-6786. Again, toll free from wherever or however you're listening to Forum. You can join us at 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls. Other ways to join us, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. And, of course, you can join us by going to our Facebook page. I'm just wondering, and I have to ask a question, and sorry to have to ask it, but with digital restoration underway, is this going to be seen only one time in Oakland in its present form? I mean, one has to ask that question, I'm afraid.
As far as we know, yes. This is so,
no national tour, nothing henceforth?
Well, there's nothing planned. So this really, I'm encouraging people, really, if they want to see it on screen with the full orchestra, they should come to Oakland this weekend and the next. It is a huge, very complex presentation. We're building three projection booths for this. We are building the screen out. The Paramount Oakland is a huge house, but it even needs to be retrofitted to accommodate Napoleon. So, there are no plans to go.
Well, but what I was talking about was digital changes that will make a film like this perhaps not as important even to some of the silent film buffs and seeing it as an original form. What do you think about that, Kevin Brownlow?
It will, I'm sure, end up transferred digitally and I hope available on Blu-ray. But there are no plans yet. It's an unbelievably expensive business just to record 5.5 hours of music.
What about those 5.5 hours? You know, I as a longtime teacher of dramatic literature, I used to do a lot of O'Neill and those long plays of O'Neill's. Do people have, I wonder in the back of my mind from time to time, the perseverance to see them nowadays? And this even extends longer than, say, Desire Under the Elms or The Iceman Cometh or those long O'Neill plays. Yeah.
I actually think people are really looking forward to it. It's an epic presentation, not only an epic film, but an epic presentation. And sitting in on the rehearsals, it flies by. The film is riveting, and the music is incredibly beautiful. And the setting at the Paramount Theater is also quite lovely.
Well, let's hear from some of our listeners. And by the way, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And Don, let's say good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. This is exciting. I was lucky, thanks to a friend of mine, to see this presented in the same way at the Chicago Theater in Chicago about 30 years ago, with the full orchestra and the whole score and the huge screen, the big finale. It's just unbelievable. And I just wondered, I remember it was long. I don't remember how long. I thought maybe your guest there could relate what I saw then back then to this one. It seems like this might be a little more complete.
That tour was in 81, 82, 80, yes.
It's 81. Not this restoration.
It's this is the film has been since more completed, but yeah, that ran about 4 hours, I believe. I saw it then, too, at the Paramount Oakland.
A different film than you have restored, Mr. Brownlow.
Well, it was cut down from the first restoration I did because it wouldn't fit the slot at the Radio City Music Hall. So Abel Gance had the same problem with the Paris Opera, and he had to cut his version down to 3.5 hours. So it was legitimate, but now you're going to be able to see all that is extant, and it's tinted and toned. The titles have been reshot in the typeface of the original, and this is as good as it gets, 2012.
Yes.
Let me thank the caller and remind you that Napoleon screens at Oakland's Paramount Theater on March 24th, 25th, 31st, and April 1st, and you can find out even more information by going to our website, kqed.org. Here's a listener from Berkeley who writes, Michael, I would love to thank Kevin Brownlow for his tireless work on behalf of preserving the history of silent films. His books and documentaries on silent film have intrigued and excited me to discover more about silent film, and at least as important, to place them in a wider context of American history. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I got to ask you both, how'd you feel about The Artist?
I liked the artist.
Did you? And you saw it, Kevin Brown?
I loved it.
Yeah. Absolutely. She liked you loved. Okay. Just wanted that for the record.
I liked it very much.
And I think the director's next film should be the story of how he made it with all the producers that turned it down playing themselves.
Here's Merrily from Oakland. It says, I look forward to seeing this. Is it the Oakland Symphony that's accompanying it or some other group? It is the Oakland Symphony.
It's the Oakland East Bay Symphony, yes.
Quick question from a listener named David. Will the Napoleon film be projected at the speed in which it was shot, or will it be speeded up by being projected at sound speed, 20 frames per second, rather than the silent speed of 16 to 18 frames?
It will not be run at 24 frames per, but I hand you to Kevin Brownlow, who can speak authoritatively.
Yes, we're showing it at the correct speed at which it was shown in 1927.
Well, that gives you the feeling of the old newsreels that makes it even more real, doesn't it?
No, it's quite the opposite. It's not speeded up. It is shown.
Excuse me, what I meant to say is that doesn't give you the feeling.
Right, yes.
And yet, why did you decide to do it at that speed?
Because that was the speed at which it was shown originally.
I know, but of course.
Every film you restore, you try and find out what it was shown at originally. And sometimes people get it hopelessly wrong. For instance, there is this myth that silent films went at 16 frames a second, and one cinematheque showed Wings at 16 frames a second, and it lasted an hour longer than it did in 1927.
Well, if someone said, you know, you have to capture now a modern audience, and therefore you have to take that into the equation, you would say what, purist that you are?
Well, it's not just being a purist. You make the technicians of the past look idiots if you show the thing at the wrong speed. And most silent films were running 20, 24 frames a second towards the end of the 20s anyway.
Let me ask you to comment. I think, Nina Monga, this is in your territory. Greg writes, as much as I'd like to see this, the price is way over the top. The tickets are being sold through Ticketmaster, which adds 30% to the cost and range from $52 to $135. Let them eat cake.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I know the tickets are quite stiff, and Ticketmaster is not the only way to buy tickets, of course. You can buy them at the box office, at the Paramount, without all of those fees attached. That ticketing agency is the only thing available to us because we are doing it at the Paramount.
This is costing you what, upwards around $75,000?
Try putting another zero on that.
$50,000, excuse me, yeah.
Yeah, it's an enormous undertaking. So, you know, and it's 5.5 hours of the most beautiful film, one of the most beautiful films in film history, beautifully restored, toned and tinted, and done at, you know, we're doing it as beautifully as we possibly can, with a full orchestra accompaniment, with Carl Davis conducting. And it's funny because I know as soon as you put film with something, people start yelling about the ticket price, but think of what it costs to go to the opera or symphony, and it becomes more.
How much did it cost you to do this restoration, Kevin Brownlow?
If I told you that it cost me £2,000, and then I sold it to the National Film Archive for what it cost me. That was my investment.
Well, I think, Anita, you want to make back. That's going to be a tough nut to crack, so to speak.
We believe in the audience in San Francisco Bay Area. We have the most interested, intelligent, enthusiastic audiences, and they've packed our Silent Film Festival every year.
So, in fact, when Mick LaSalle was on, he was raving. The San Francisco Chronicle film critic. Thank you, Dan. And here is Phyllis from Menlo Park. Hi, Phyllis.
Oh, hi. Well, sounds fascinating. As a writer, though, you hardly mentioned who the filmmaker is. Did he write a screenplay? Who is he? Where is he from? Where did he live? Other things about him? He's a little bit responsible for the film, I should think.
Well, we just told you how handsome and gallant he was. But give us a little biographical history of his oeuvre. Kevin Brownlow?
Abel Gance was an actor who despised what he was acting in. He thought the early films were really pathetic. And he became a revolutionary filmmaker around 1919 with a great pacifist film called J'accuse, I accuse.
Which was based on Zola's novel, was it?
No, but it took that line.
Oh, it stole the title.
The title, and was an original screenplay. And he followed that with an epic of the railways called La Roue, The Wheel. And by that time, he was the most famous director in Europe. And he went to the United States and met his idol, D.W. Griffith, who was making a film about the French Revolution, funnily enough. And Gans decided he was going...
Also made perhaps one of the most racist films of all history.
Well, we'll have another program to talk about that one.
Let me thank the caller. Actually, here's a listener who writes, I'm not sure what this means. Considering that Obama has just signed another police state law, I think the return of Napoleon is an apropos subject reflecting today's politics. We'll go to more of your calls. Lumi, good morning. You're on.
Hi. Assuming that my child can sit for 5.5 hours, do you think this movie is appropriate for a child of 10 years old?
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's good to know. Because
what do you think, Kevin?
Well, I wasn't much older when I found the first two reels, and I'm still at it.
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary for children.
Good luck to you. Here's a listener named Thomas. Says, Napoleon was shown at the Paramount many years ago. I don't remember how long, although I'm pretty sure we still have a poster of it. What is different this time?
This is the complete-er restoration, and it's shown at...
Complete-er with a U-R or an E-R at the
E-R.
End?
E-R. And you are.
That's one that Francis Coppola was involved in.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what's his involvement here, or is there an involvement here?
Well, we're calling them co-presenters, American Zoetrope and Photoplay and BFI have all signed on to put their imprimatur on the presentation.
And we'll hear next from Richard. Richard, join us.
Oh, Michael, this is such a pleasure. I can't tell you what it is to hear this being discussed. I was at the 1981 showing in Los Angeles and had the great fortune of being called by my friend who had an extra ticket and included me in it, and it was just he and I. And it was completely glorious, unbelievably sweeping and amazing. I was a young stuntman at the time. My friend, a young actor, budding director, writer. He later became known as Quentin Tarantino. And I can't tell you what it meant to the two of us. We discussed it for hours and hours afterward. In one of the intermissions, a man in an elegant black tie with a cigarette that made, in the days when cigarettes looked elegant and graceful, was standing by the fountain at intermission, and it was Donald O'Connor. And I could not say something. Quint couldn't approach him. He was scared to death.
Well, you just say singing in the rain. That's all you need.
Oh, my friend. I approached him and just said, dear sir, I'm so enamored. You've touched me my whole life in film, and I appreciate that so much. And he was very kind and gracious. He introduced me and Clint to his wife, and we had a lovely conversation.
I need to ask you, Richard, do you see the influence of Napoleon in Tarantino's work?
You know, there's so much to talk about. I've actually called before, Michael, and talked to you about Clinton, and this was the last, these are the last innocent years of Clinton, and I do see that he may have been touched as he was in many other ways. We went to go see the opening of Conan the Barbarian together with my wife, and he came away with a completely different take on it than I. And there's no arguing his genius with memory and being able to string together unusual and very, very tough pieces of the human condition, but I have to say his friendship and his treatment of dear friends, and I don't mean me, he was never unkind to me, was lost after he gained fame, and he was quite cruel to other friends.
Well, it's an old story, alas. I've seen him on talk shows, and he does come across pretty boorish. But I thank you for the call and appreciate hearing from you. I want to hear from some more callers here. Here's Robert. Robert, on. You're on. Hi.
Hi. No one has mentioned the composer of the score, which sounds magnificent.
Oh, yes, we have. We have mentioned the composer.
Who wrote the music?
It's Carl Davis composed.
Carl Davis. So both Anita and I mentioned it. But let's find out more about him. Give us a sketch of Carl Davis.
Well, Kevin should speak to Carl because Kevin approached him the first time with Napoleon.
It's slightly confusing to call it an original score because that was the one by Arthur Honegger in 1927. But the score that was written in 1980 by Carl Davis was due to the fact that Carl had written the music for the Hollywood series that David Gill and I had made. He'd also written the music for The World at War, and we all admired him tremendously, but we never thought that he was going to be able to produce a complete score for this picture in 3 months, which is all he had.
It's extraordinary.
To do it in.
He's how old now?
I don't think he'd like me to tell you that.
Well, I mean, he's going to be here, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's going to be conducting.
He's here rehearsing right this moment.
And thank you for that call. Here's Angela in Atherton. Hi, Angela.
Good morning. Gentlemen, I would like to just make a comment about, and lady, I'm sorry, madam, about the artist. I don't for the life of me see how it managed to get an Oscar. It is, in my opinion, a bloody bore, and I walked out within the first half an hour.
Well, you know what Mark Twain said. That's what makes horse races. I mean, there are people who adore this film, obviously, and I thank you for that call. Here's somebody who wants to know, how did the film get lost, the movie get lost after its initial screening in 1927? It was sort of lost, stolen, and strayed, I guess.
That's the story of many films in history, but Kevin can speak to that, too.
We've got a little bit of time left. But
it was chopped up by exhibitors, primarily, and it because it didn't make money, nobody bothered to preserve a perfect print of it. And Gans tried to put it back in a sound version in 1934. And he did it again in 1970 with Bonaparte and the Revolution. But none of them were proper versions of the 1927 masterpiece.
Well, once again, you can find out more information by going to our website, kqed.org. I want to thank Kevin Brownlow. Congratulations on all your good work. Nita Monga, director of the San Francisco Silent Film Festival, thank you, our listeners. You're hearing some of that music come up here as we bid you adieu for the day, the morning. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Tina Larberg. We also have on our staff now Polly Stryker. And thanks to Katrina Schwartz. Thanks to our engineer, Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.